understand whether the local government is improving or not improving, what are the challenges, what are the issues, and then have a discussion on this matter. I must welcome the office, and we are here that we are here, we are taking us through on this issue. We want to invite you to take the floor and then take us through and see what are the new things that you want us to know about the local government in our country. Where are the areas of improvement? Where are the weaknesses? What should be done? Okay. You can take us through. Other colleagues have been showing us if I'm waiting for that. You introduce, of course, yourself.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Kornay Meyner. I'm the business executive responsible for the National Department of OCTA. With Ms. Trefu, she's the liaison manager in our parliamentary office. I also have a colleague that is still stuck in traffic, so I'm going to... but, you can start. I'll take you through, and hopefully you'll be here before we ask questions. In terms of our reputation promise, we are the audit institution, the Supreme Audit Institution, and we also assist oversight committees in exercising their oversight role. So I also hope that this information, though it has already been tabled, that we will also be able to assist this committee. Just some background, in terms of the Public Audit Act, there are three areas that we need to express an opinion on or conclude on. The first area is in terms of the financial statements, and I'm going to try and see. The first area is, we start on the left-hand side, say presentation. We need to express an opinion on the financial statements, whether the information in there is fair and accurately presented. The second area is in terms of performance information, so it is departments or municipalities will prepare an annual performance plan. At the end of the year, they report on that. Instead of the annual report, we verify that information in terms of accuracy, reliability, and usefulness, and then we conclude on that. At the moment, we don't express an opinion on it publicly in the audit report, but we do highlight material findings. And then the last area that we need to report on and conclude on is compliance with laws and regulations that we then conclude on. Our message, I think in general what we are saying is that there is improvement. If we start on the left-hand side, improvement in audit outcomes. Just briefly, there are different audit outcomes that we refer to. The first one is a green, unqualified with no findings. That will be where the financial statements is fair presentation, there's no findings on performance information, there's no findings on compliance, and what we generally refer to as a green. Then the yellow will be unqualified work findings, financial statements fairly present, and there's either findings on compliance and or on performance information. The purple will be qualified, so there are certain components like property, plant and infrastructure or revenue that is qualified. So we will say except for revenue, the rest of the financial statements are fairly presented. The pink color is adverse. When it comes to adverse, there's a disagreement with manager, and that disagreement is so pervasive that we are saying the entire set of financial statements is incorrect and doesn't fairly present. And then we have the red block that is the same to the findings. So there we have limitations, and we can't express an opinion due to information that hasn't been submitted to us or due to a limitation. Monica, my colleague just walked in, so it's Andrew. So what is in terms of the audit outcomes is that there was a steady improvement in terms of the number of clean or unqualified with no findings. We started in 2011-12 with only a 5% that were in that category. It improved to 9%, and currently for the 13-14 year there were 17% of audits that were unqualified with no findings. We can see that unqualified work findings is staying within the 40-43-44-41% range. But there is an improvement in terms of qualifications, previously there were 23% qualified in 2011-12, 28% qualified in 2012-13, and only 22%. So if we look at the outcomes, there's definitely a slight and steady improvement in terms of outcomes. If we go to the key role players, I mean, we always talk about providing assurance and compliance assurance, so there's three tiers or three levels where we look for assurance. The first level is within the audit team, the senior managers. I mean, they are there on a day-to-day basis. They're the first line of defense. They must make sure that the controls are in place, that the reconciliations happen, that the documentation are safeguarded. We have the accounting officers or authorities and the mayor there. And then on the second level, we're looking at internal audit, the audit committees, treasury and corporate. So for the first and the second level, we see that all those levels improve and there was more assurance that we could get from these levels compared to last year or previous years. I think interesting is if you look at the first level of assurance, specifically senior managers, it's 17% where we say they provided full assurance. And there's a direct link to the 17% of clean audits. And as I said, your senior managers is your first line of defense. If they let the controls done, I mean, there will be real operations at the end of the day. Documentation won't be available. So it's very important that that first level of defense are there, that they diligently do what they're supposed to do. And in the first level, there are three areas there as well. We've got the municipal councils, the municipal audit accounts committees, and then the portfolio committees. The only one that didn't show improvement is the portfolio committees, in terms of their oversight and then the assurance that they provide. If we continue, we also look at the key controls. There's three areas that we look at. It's leadership, financial performance management, and governance. When we look at leadership, it's really the tongue from the top. What is acceptable, ethical behavior, making sure that the policies are there, vacancies are full. Financial and performance management is once again the senior management, and their day-to-day controls, making sure that everything that should be there is there, action plans are in place, it's being followed up and monitored, compliance are being monitored, and then governance is the internal audit, audit committees, and then the risk committee. In all three of these areas, we've also seen improvement from year on year, because this is a comparison between 12-13 and 13-14, and for all three, we can see that there is improvement. If we look at the risk areas, the ethics risk area that the office consider and report on. The first one, if you look in the middle block, right on the left-hand side, the quality of financial statements. Financial statements, 26% of the financial statements were accurate and free of material misstatements and didn't require correction. 74% of the financial statements that we've received will require some work to either prevent the qualification or to reduce the number of qualifications. And I think that's the area that needs attention. Then the second one is the quality of performance information. Almost a similar picture there. 26% of performance information, annual report information that was accurate and reliable. 74% of the information required some work and had to be amended. Supply chain management, there was only 10% of the entities and the municipalities that complied and had their findings on supply chain. 26% had concerns and findings, and then 64% of them to such an extent that there was non-compliance reported in the audit reports. If we look at financial health, 30% had no financial health concerns. 56% there were concerns, and 31% were actually saying we are concerned about their financial health, the way that they pay the debtors, after creditors, collecting their debtors, and spending the money as they should spend it, spending trends. Lastly is human resource management. They once again saying that 28% there was no findings from human resources. 40% we had findings. There's a bit of concern, but to that extent that it was reported in the audit report. 32% of the municipalities had findings that were raised in the audit report. And then the last area that we focus on is information IT, information technology, with only 11% where there was no concerns, 53% with concerns, and 38% serious concerns. If you look at this, I mean, there was improvement in terms of the financial statements, the performance information, and the human resource area, supply chain management and financial health degree, and then information technology, same seconds from the previous year. If we look at the root causes for the outcome of 13-14, we see that there are no responses to address root causes that was previously communicated, and that we've identified in 69% of the audits, that although they knew about certain of the root causes, there was action plans, the action plans weren't executed, followed and monitored. Key vacant positions that should be filled with skilled people that have not been filled people that competence across the appropriate competencies, we've identified that at 63% of the municipalities. And then at 50% inadequate conflict risk management. I would say, you know, nothing is going to happen if you do something wrong, but there's no consequences, why should behavior change? So without consequence management and correcting behavior, there is going to be slow improvement. Overall improvement, this is just over 6 year period since 2019, so 13-14, and once again, just the measure, as I said, a constant slow improvement in terms of outcomes. If we take the budget that was allocated to the municipality, in terms of the intake, the 14% that is clean, it will constitute 27% of the budget that was relating to clean audits. 49% of the budget was spent by municipalities that were financially unqualified with other findings. 16% of the budget was spent was qualified, and the 6% of the budget there was disclaimers. If you look at the 9 provinces and just compare them a bit, you can see once again that there was improvement for all the provinces. We are comparing 12-13 to 13-14. The first group and this group them are 3 groups. The first group is Western Cape, KZN and Gauteng province. So if we look at that, we can see that there is a steady and a significant increase in terms of the number of clean audits. They've got strong controls in place, the disciplines are there, and what we see is what they've implemented is sustainable. Northern Cape, Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga is the second group. We see some improvements, but not that significant. I mean, if we look at Mpumalanga, there's only 2 municipalities that are clean. If we look at Northern Cape, there's also only 2, and Eastern Cape is 3. So they are starting to move into the right direction, but it's not significant at this point. So what we are saying is the controls are not strong in accuracy. There are still weaknesses in the controls, the systems are still vulnerable, and it can be abused and misused if the controls aren't strengthened. And then the last group is 3 State, North, West, and Limpopo. If we look at these, there are no clean audits in those specific provinces, so they are still financially unqualified with our findings, which still shows that the financial controls aren't there yet. There's a lot of joint effort to get them up to a point where they can be financially unqualified, but they couldn't prevent the non-compliance or findings on performance information. We just compared once again over the 5 years, and once again we can see that all the provinces showed improvement over 5 years. Only Mpumalanga that showed improvement to a lesser extent. If we go into the specific provinces, and I'm not going to go through everything, but what I would like to highlight is when we look at 3 states, there's slow improvement, with no clean audits at this stage, the key control stagnated, there's unauthorized expenditure remained at 2.3 billion rand, and irregular expenditure increased to 954 million. And this is basically as a result of non-compliance and unwillingness to address the weaknesses to make sure that there's compliance with the supply chain. Attention, what they should focus on is filling key vacancies, appointing engineers to assist them at the district level, implement consequent management, and improve slow response by leadership. If you look at the bottom, we've highlighted the specific municipality that needs specific attention and intervention. I skip one slide. We can just go back to Eastern Cape. We can see there was some improvement. There's currently 2 municipalities that is clean. Sustainability remain a concern. I mean, whatever they implement should be sustainable to maintain what they've achieved. They shouldn't go up clean year, next year, and qualify for finding. So the processes should be involved so that it is sustainable. Irregular expenditure, we're looking at 3.35 billion rand of irregular expenditure and 2 billion rand of unauthorized expenditure in Eastern Cape. What they should focus on is basic financial performance management disciplines, building a culture of zero tolerance, and once again, consequence management, and making sure that if there is a law or a regulation that is not adhered to, that there is action taken, enforcing consequence management. If we go to Gauteng, we can see that there was a significant improvement in Gauteng in 2013-14. Previously, there was only 3 municipalities with clean. In the year that we're referring to, there were 13 municipalities that were clean and had no funding. Improvement is supported by the mock improvement in compliance with the legislation from 9% to 44% this year. So what we see is that discipline to make sure that compliance, laws and regulations are monitored, that transgressions are identified, controls are improved, that significantly improved up to a level of 44% of the entities that hadn't had funding on compliance. Status of predetermined objectives remains second. So that is the area where Gauteng should focus on for the ones that isn't clean at the moment. If you look at KwaZulu-Natal, there has also been improvement as a result of strengthened internal controls. The quality of financial statements also improved during the year under review. So there were less municipalities that had been fair and no corrections to financial statements. They should however still focus on implementation and monitoring of action plans, filling of free vacancies, and continuous training of staff to ensure that their skills and competencies are in the municipality to do what they have to do. In Papua, there is significant improvement, although they don't have any clean audits as yet, but they moved in terms of 19 financially and from 0 unqualified financial statements last year to 19. So I think that is also showing that there is a change in terms of leadership in Limpopo. There is improved response by political leadership. The status of predetermined objectives remains stagnant, so they focus on the financial statements, but we see no change in terms of performance information. Concern over key positions that remain vacant. So obviously, I mean, if positions aren't full, it's difficult for one person to do more than one person. So attention is divided, so they need to spend time on filling key vacant positions with skilled and competent staff. In Mpumalanga, there's a bit of regression in terms of outcomes. High levels of non-compliance with procurement regulations were identified in Mpumalanga. Lack of consequences of transgression, and there was poor internal control. What they should pay attention to is compliance with supply chain to reduce the number of irregular expenditure, to prevent it and to detect it, setting the right leadership tone. The tone that is being set by leadership, what is acceptable, what is not acceptable, that zero tolerance that we spoke to in other provinces, leadership need to start setting the tone in terms of what should happen. Skills in administration and oversight, and then basic internal control discipline. But without the right leadership, it's going to be difficult for the financial, the day-to-day managers to install that discipline and to keep it up. Northern Cape has seen some improvement in financial outcomes. Sustainability remains concerned due to the reliance on consultants. So in Northern Cape specifically, we saw a number of consultants that came in. So obviously there might have been improvement in terms of audit outcomes, but if there was a skills transfer from the consultant to the staff that is there, the risk is that they're going to regress next year. So they need to make sure that they take the skills that they've learned, implement the controls, and make sure that they continue with what has been put in place. And then compliance of legislation and reporting performance information remain active. They should focus on basic financial disciplines. As I say, they have consultants in, but the people that are there should make sure that the daily records are in place, the records are maintained, that there's a retention process, that there's a monitoring process, a review process by the CFO, so that they can make sure that everything, that financial information is accurate at any point in time. And then setting the right tone by implementing consequence management. Northwest, they've improved outcomes at 8 municipalities, they've improved cooperation of municipalities in resolving audit matters, so there was better understanding, the action plans were followed through, they were monitored, and there was 100% of the municipalities there had fines on non-compliance. So the Northwest, that is the area that they need to focus on, is making sure that they understand the requirements of the law, have processes in place to monitor what they should do, and pick up on that non-compliance. So attention, where they should focus on, sustainability of audit outcomes, skills transfer by consultants, so obviously there was also consultants, ineffective oversight structures resulting in non-compliance, and lack of consequence management. And then the last province where we have a bit of detail is then Western Cape, where you see there was a significant and a sustained improvement in terms of audit outcomes. The number of clean audits improved by 50% from 2012-2013. Sustainability remains a focus area, so once again, I always say it's difficult to get to clean, it's more difficult to maintain and stay at clean. The areas that they should pay attention to is quality of the financial statements at 9 of the auditees, annual performance reports where they had to make material adjustments. There was an increase in unauthorized expenditure from 505 million to 628 million in 2013-14, and there was also an increase in regular expenditure. So that once again come back in terms of the discipline of compliance with laws and regulations. It's fine. Okay. If we continue, just in terms of the improved quality of financial statements, what we see there over the 3 years that 48% of the financial statements in 2011-12 were accurate and correct when it was received, compared to 58% in the current year. So there was a significant improvement in terms of the quality of financial statements that was also submitted. We are still concerned about the number of disclaimers. I mean, that was 29%, currently 16%, so it reduced, but obviously we don't want to set the disclaimers and qualify for the outcomes. Quality of submitted financial statements, once again, the message of that is improved. If we look at 2013-14, if they haven't corrected financial statements, 74% of the municipalities would have been qualified. After corrections, after the audit was conducted, the findings were improved, there were only 39% of municipalities that remain qualified. So that just shows that there's still a lot of room for improvement in terms of the quality of financial statements that are being submitted for audit. We're also seeing the same trend in terms of the previous year. If we look at the different outcomes before correction and after correction, we can see before correction, majority of the provinces would have remained stagnant with the yellow colors, and then KwaZulu-Natal, Northern Cape, Western Cape, that would have improved without the corrections being made. After the corrections were made, if we then look at the outcomes, most of the provinces improved. It was only Gauteng and Western Cape that remained stagnant after the financial statements were adjusted and corrected.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Apologies for being late. There was an accident on the highway. I hope there was no loss of life in that accident, but it was involving a taxi. We can only be praying for the people. Chair, if I can continue where my colleague has left off. In terms of what we discussed, where the entities or the municipalities were qualified, these are the most common qualification areas as noted from our paper. And you will see that the significant contributor to the qualification was our property and infrastructure, our PPE environment. And this basically stems from your municipalities not having proper fixed asset registers. So when we get to go and conduct audit, we more often than not supply with fixed asset registers that detail exactly the details, the nature and the extent of our fixed assets that we have in the municipalities. Where we do have those fixed asset registers are more often than not, also not well documented. It doesn't allow for you to go and conduct your audit. So you'll have a bunch of, like fleet names and stuff like that, but you can't actually go and verify the infrastructure that's there on the fleet because it's not well documented, even though maybe there was an attempt to do so. And also what's worrying, Chair, if you look at the trend, you'll see the red where you've got 80, that's repeat qualifications. So 80% of the municipalities that encountered challenges in the previous years with regard to fixed asset disclosure also had similar findings in the current year that resulted in that qualification. So it's quite concerning. It shows that progress really isn't being made in that regard of addressing the fixed asset qualification. And then the next qualification areas really go hand in hand, because if you look at receivables and revenue, the one is the other leg of the other one.
That is how you bring your people out there for services delivered. And if you see, in this regard, the common root causes are the experiencing challenges with the billing system and the billing processes to generate the revenue. We often do not allow the sufficient documentation in terms of the billing system, billing processes, and then ultimately, once you have billed, there's also a responsibility for you to collect that revenue that you've billed. So that is where receivables come in. And then also there with regard to receivables, there's challenges in terms of the report that we get in terms of how much exactly is owed to the municipality by whom and distinguishing those. So from my point of view, I was also worrying if came to see that the 59 and the 57 relate to municipalities where in the previous year that also received the qualification in those specific areas as well. In terms of how we can move forward in terms of addressing those checks, we recommend from the work that we've done that the proper record keeping, like we said, the fixed asset register, making sure your receivables, aging, your debtors listing is up to date, correctly reflects what's happening in your municipality. You can clearly identify your assets, and you can clearly identify who owes you how much money at any given point in time. Daily discipline. I think Cornelius also alluded to this fact that, you know, the more you do something, the better you get at it. So practice makes perfect. It's just making sure that we do those things on a regular basis, on a daily basis, that will allow for us to, when we come to reporting time, be able to consolidate everything in an appropriate, accurate, complete, and reliable manner. And then action plans as well. More often than not, some of these municipalities will go and develop an action plan to come and address these shortcomings, but as you've learned in previous slides, a number of them were in the repeat category, if you remember the red blocks in those three qualification areas. So again, that raises the question with regard to the effectiveness of the action plan that was developed to go and address those specific shortcomings identified. And then capacity, yes, we do recognize that in some of the municipalities that there would be some capacity constraints, especially in the critical areas of financial management and financial accounting reporting, as well as in your other significant components, like, for example, in your property, plant and equipment, that there could be challenges with regard to your engineers and your technical skills that result in us not being able to adequately compile a fixed asset register. And then this is a bit of a recommendation in terms of coordinated manner that we should work in. We're saying there are a number of stakeholders which are involved in trying to help municipalities, of which COCTA is one. We've got our SAGAs and our treasuries, but we feel as far as financial management is concerned that treasury could possibly intensify its support and focus on sustainable solutions, especially in the areas of training and guidance and helping municipalities to develop appropriate SOPs, our standard operating procedures, and just common, you know, knowledge sharing forums. Where municipality in KZN or Gauteng is doing well, Cornelius has indicated some of the provinces are doing well, why don't we have more sharing with the provinces that could be seen as struggling, like our Mpumalanga, etc. And then the next couple of slides, Che, if you recall what Cornelius went through, Cornelius spoke about the six focus areas. The six focus areas gave percentages, so the detail that's following is a detail supplementing those focus areas. So we've already spoken about the financial statements, now we're going to talk about compliance. We're going to give a little more detail with regard to the performance reporting, a little more detail with regard to HR, as well as financial health, and then also our fiscal health as well.
Did I cover all six of them?
Okay, we'll see if I missed it. Oh no, IT environment is the other one. So again, for this slide, we did note a slight improvement in terms of compliance with laws and regulations. When you look at the numbers, you know, how many numbers of them have got material findings reported on the audit report? You see in the previous year we had 53, in the current year we have 60, which means that there is an improvement in this area of non-compliance. However, it's still an area of concern because 80% of the municipalities had significant non-compliance reported on the audit report. But if you look at in which areas those areas of non-compliance were, we'll see that the bulk of it relates to contract and procurement management. So this is the ability of the municipality to procure in a manner that is compliant with Section 207 of the Constitution, making sure our procurement is equitable, fair, and transparent. Now, often than not, you'll find that there was some non-compliance in the area of supply chain management where we did not comply. Like, for example, we didn't get three quotations or a proper bidding process was not followed. Chair, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. I'd like to spend some time on the next slide, which is slide 25, which gives us the details of the SCM non-compliances that we identified. So you see in the middle, I think it's figure 3, if you can read, if it's legible there on the screen, the middle top part. So those are the areas in which the supply chain management transgressions were noted and reported appropriately. So the first one was the uncompetitive or unfair procurement processes. So we've touched about that. It's not getting the minimum required number of quotations, not making sure that you're following a competitive bidding process as required by the SCM free scripts. And then also, I'm going to be a little bit mucky and spend some time on Otherwise, we said a word to other officials of the state, words to close family members and of employees and councillors, and then words to employees and councillors themselves. So obviously, the legislation prohibits doing business with your municipality, or if you're a councillor, or if you're a public servant, if one could take it a little bit broader, if you didn't have proper pre-approval, and especially if even if it's your family as well, it's also not allowed in that sense. So we also pick up our process also geared, we pick up some of these where indeed I go to a municipality and I order them, we pick up that maybe a councillor was involved, even whether it be in that municipality or from a different municipality or somebody else in the employ of government. The reason why I said I want to spend some time with this is normally we get asked and challenged that in terms of committees, like yourself to do your oversight, you'd like to see the number and the names of those people in those municipalities. There is just a little bit of a procedural challenge. I know we are, as an Office of the AG, working with COPTA and with SAGA in terms of them compiling the action plans to address this shortcoming. But in terms of our reporting, the only thing that we issue to Parliament or to the public out there is our audit report. Now, in our audit report, we just give the instance of non-compliance which we've identified, but we don't give the detail of saying, councillor or was saying what didn't disclose, or this is the challenge in terms of that specific name. That detail is given to management of the municipality, what we call the management report, the detail of those findings. So normally we get asked as Office of the AG to give those details, but in terms of the law we are not allowed to give it because it's a report to management. So if any parliamentary question comes up that requires a detail, we recommend that maybe we can just approach the municipality directly and request it from the municipality directly in terms of the proper process that's allowed in this area. So now, Chair, if we can move on, in terms of the irregular expenditure, although we are noting a decrease, I think we'll all agree that the amounts are still very significant. I mean, it's still exceeding 11 billion rand. But the most worrying thing with regards to the irregular expenditure reporting, honourable members, is the fact that we reported this at in the previous years as well. And when we reported that 113 of those auditees at the bottom left did not go and investigate. Now, if you look at it, the PFMA and MFMA both have bestowed certain responsibilities on the accounting officer to say, once somebody has incurred irregular expenditure and authorized or fruitless and wasteful expenditure, you must go and investigate and determine whether somebody should be held accountable and what the way forward is. So now, we reported it and we've noted in the current year that no follow-up action was indeed done by those municipalities where it was reported. And then also, that also alluded to earlier, that the nature of the irregular expenditure was just as a result of supply chain management non-compliance, where we did not follow proper procurement processes as required. I'm not going to spend a lot of time at the highest contributors, but they are there in terms of the details. Nelson Mandela Bay in the Eastern Cape, Matlosana in Clarksdorp. Unfortunately, that all happens to be where I come from, being second highest there in not doing so well in that area. And the next slide deals with fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So basically, when we have paid something, and we've paid expenditure, or we've paid amount of money, and we don't get value for money back. So we've paid something in vain, and the definition of it also says that had we taken a reasonable steps, that expenditure could have also been avoided. So although also a difference is noted in this, the same message as in the previous slide, in the same that 94 of the auditees we reported it, and it wasn't followed up for investigation in the follow-up year. And the nature of it also is just, it's interest on overdue accounts. So we're not paying our accounts on time, resulting in us incurring interest and having to pay that interest, and also in terms of late payments as well to service providers such as SARS and other service providers which are involved. As far as authorized expenditure is concerned, unauthorized expenditure by definition, sorry Chair, I proceeded to jump into the detail. I assume as a committee, we are well versed with regard to the three different types of expenditure, which one is irregular, which one, what is fruitless and wasteful, and then ultimately also what is unauthorized. So the one just says, I paid 100 rand, I got value for money for 100, but before I was supposed to procure this, I was supposed to get three quotations, a bidding process, follow in terms of the procurement process, and that wasn't followed, resulting in non-compliance with SEM, that's irregular expenditure. But it's fruitless and wasteful, it means I've paid somebody money to give me something, they haven't delivered the goods or services, so I've paid money in vain. And unauthorized means my budget was 100, and I paid 110, which means I've exceeded my budget in terms of what I was authorized to have been allowed to spend. As far as unauthorized expenditure is concerned in the business year, you'll note, Chair and Honourable Members, that quite a large decrease from 8.5 billion to 11.5 billion, so it's a 3 billion increase. But the nature of it is what makes it a little bit more complex. because this is not a cash basis of accounting, these guys do a core basis of accounting. So when you do your budgeting process, you are required to make sure that in terms of the accounting status, that you also appropriately budget for your non-cash items. So your non-cash items such as your depreciation, etc. So when the municipalities do the upfront budgeting, they don't always adequately apply proper budgeting processes, resulting when you come to the end, you need to measure them against their budget, that they overspend because they didn't take into account all of these non-cash items as well. Recommendations in terms of how these shortcomings could be remedied. We just feel that management should implement processes whereby they are well versed with the requirements of the legislation. They must be able to be in a position where they can clearly identify and monitor all this legislation which is applicable to financial and performance reporting and management thereof, as well as proper record keeping, especially in the area of SEM. So it's very challenging for us to go and ascertain whether you did follow proper procurement processes if the documentation is also not there. So from my point of view, if you did send out the RFQs and you got the three quotations in, you did the BEC scoring for proper bidding, make sure that all of those myths are on file so that when the AG comes in and needs to evaluate you, that there's proper record keeping and proper records management processes in place. The next two bullet points I'd like us to read in conjunction. So the one talks about, actually the next bullet points. One talks about compliance checklist, the other one talks about the monitoring thereof, and the other one talks about the regular reporting thereof. So as a starter point or a point of departure, we should look at implementing some compliance checklist. So before MM signs off on a specific process or procedure or a payment that's due, you should check that there's a checklist on file that says, yes, I got the three quotations in, yes, I advertised for minimum 21 days, I got the original tax clearance certificate, and based on that, whoever's requesting the services has signed off, and then the final approval also signs on there. And the next one will also go with regard to the monitoring there. But in order for you to monitor, you need to have a process of also reporting them. So you need to get the information first, compile your report, submit to someone like your MM. The MM needs to monitor it maybe on a monthly basis. And from there onwards, also report to council and to the executive on a monthly basis in terms of how we are faring as an entity in terms of our compliance. And then also just our policies and procedures. Some of our policies and procedures, actual policy and procedure that's there in the municipality, some of them are not aligned to the legislation. So if not aligned to the legislation, there's a big risk that it will not get done because people are working according to what's in the policy or the SOP that's implemented at the municipality. And then this is the second last bullet point is probably a critical one as well, because you need to have an incumbent in the position, especially in the SEM unit, to make sure that everything is looking after the entity, to make sure that we are complying with the legislative laws and the requirements with regard to SEM. The next focus area, Chair, is the financial health. So in the financial health, we noted regression, as Corneille alluded to earlier on. The reason why we noted regression is if you look at the financial position of some of the municipalities, the key financial contributors or indicators in terms of financial health were our net current liability position. So this basically means that if you look at the current assets, they are less than current liability. So our creditors and our other liabilities, current liabilities, exceed our debtors and cash in the bank. So what it basically means is that we are not in a liquid position. It poses significant challenges with the municipality being able to pay its short-term creditors as and when they fall due in terms of paying up for our payables. And then also a deficit for the year, which basically just means that our expenditure for the whole year exceeded our revenue that we were able to either generate from our own income-generating processes or that we got in from grants or other avenues of revenue streams. And then our year-end bank balance showing overdraft, and that's pretty self-explanatory that we didn't have any cash in the bank and we're in an overdraft position. But also what noting here is on the other side, and this is what we touched on when we look at the qualification, is 10% of debt which is deemed to be recoverable. So we get the debtors book from the municipality, and when you analyze it, you realize that 10% of the debtors book really has no chance of us actually recovering it, either because it's very long outstanding, there's new initiatives by the municipalities to try and recover those funds, and it talks hand in hand with the next bullet point, which is debt collection period of more than 90 days. So if you find more often than not that you have debtors outstanding for even over a year, and there are no initiatives by management to try and recover those debts that are really showing that we really want to. And maybe just as a point of, again, being a little bit naughty, the pending patents on the right bottom side, and then I'm bringing this one up because I'm personally responsible for the audit of FOCTA, and I look at the mid-ground from the other side. The FOCTA transfers the money in terms of the municipal infrastructure grants, and municipalities must go and spend it. And if you look at it, it's underspending the conditional grant by more than 10%. I think in the current, it was sitting at either 12 or 15% under correction. I'll recall the exact percentage. But if you can imagine 12% of about 14.5 billion, It's a lot of money that's not being utilized for the intended purpose, and that money specifically earmarked for infrastructure development, and which ultimately those infrastructure assets which are being built should result in service delivery. So, Chair, we've already spoken, maybe if we move on to the next focus area. The next risk area is our performance report. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one because we're going to capture the essence. This is now our performance reporting, and we're saying that we allow the entity to go and adjust certain adjustments in terms of their performance reporting to make sure that they get some favorable outcomes in this regard. But the biggest challenge that we have here is that municipalities are still producing plans or IDPs which are not useful. What I mean not useful is when you look at the target and the indicators and objectives, you don't find them useful in the sense that they are measurable, reliable, and specific, that they give the user a sense of what exactly it is that the municipality intends to achieve, and that allows for you that when they come at the end, that you can measure them against what they preset themselves in terms of predetermined objectives. And the next issue as well is the reliability. Now, once you have a plan, let's look at the end of the period when you need to account for your reporting in terms of how you have fared. And that reporting process also has some of its own challenges. As we report the reliability concerns or challenges, with a performance report produced by the municipality is not reliable in terms of, you know, when we look at the source documentation, it's not adequately stating exactly what their achievements is that they are reporting. And then you'll see there for the bottom part is where we haven't received any performance reports from those respective municipalities. And if you check, say, if you notice, and honourable members, you'll see the first top part, the first top tier of the whole line talks to all entities, which is your municipalities and your municipal entities. So the next tier will look at just your municipalities, and the bottom tier will look at just your municipal entities. So that should be read in conjunction. It's the same information from left to right, but just at all the three different tiers. I think we'll, for the purpose of the meeting, just focus on the top like we have now, and you'll see 147 municipalities do not have plans which allow you to be able to measure them in the end or say exactly what it is that they are trying to achieve. 120, they reported, but whatever they report was deemed to be not reliable because either it wasn't supported by evidence or it wasn't exit or complete. And then about 30 of them, no reports, and that's guys which just are carrying forward from the previous years. But I couldn't really add up all the numbers. I'm just focusing on all that at once. Okay, Corrie also spoke with regard to focus areas, as she alluded to HR management. And Chair, this one I'd like to maybe just jog your memory as well in terms of what we discussed when we discussed the SCM process. The vacancies, you see that the biggest challenges we have in terms of percentage-wise is ahead of SCM units on the top left-hand side there. So if you look at what the message we've been sending across from the beginning, you have challenges in your supply chain management, you see this vacancy in your SEM unit as well, that obviously then could be deemed the root cause of exactly why some of these municipalities are experiencing challenges in the area of supply chain management. And then what we've also tried to do is to give you sort of an indication in terms of stability and capacity. How many months are all of the incomes in their position? So we can try and determine if there's a trend. If a guy is new in his position, is getting a disclaimer, maybe that tells us a story that, you know, he's still finding his feet. But again, if a guy is 5 years in his position, like a municipal manager, he's still getting a disclaimer, then maybe we need to start asking different questions from that point of view. We try to be a little bit, you know, to give you some form of trend. And again, they're not saying anything, there's no non-compliance, it's just giving you an indication of exactly if we can correlate the outcome with the position and the time in which the incumbent has been in the position. What is important for us here is if you page over, you'll see on slide number 33, where most of the municipalities achieved unqualified with no findings, you'll see that the municipal manager has been there for almost 5 years. That's 47 months. So my mate tells me 60 months is 5 years. So at least it shows you from a stability point of view, is that time to really work his interventions, implement his interventions, monitor and see what works and doesn't work, and be able to come up with some favorable outcomes. And again, if you go down with the chain, you see that the screen was findings only 2 years, and that's the least amount of time that MM on average has been in the position. On slide number 34, again, this one now deals with the minimum competencies not achieved. We are all over the Treasury as indicated or put forth a number of minimum competencies which each individual of some of those key positions should have. And when you look at the key positions that we've deemed important from audit process is your MMA or CEOs in terms of municipal entities, the CFOs and the head of SEM units. And again, you'll see where we say where they have not achieved or they're not meeting the minimum competencies, that's a dark blue block. You see head of SEM units, so yes, where the guys are appointed, like we alluded to earlier, they don't have the minimum competencies. So that guy is quite critical in the sense that he's dealing with specific laws and regulations and specific requirements for us to be able to comply with, and if the person doesn't have the minimum competencies, then we are significantly exposed from that point of view. And then I think the message is quite straightforward in terms of that. But it is which was assisted by consultants. Honourable Chair, honourable members, would you recall last year the AG issued, two years ago, where we issued a report where we looked at certain national departments, key national departments, and analysed their spending in terms of consultants. Now again, the law, there's nothing wrong with getting a consultant in, it's not prohibited by the law, but once you get a consultant in, there should have first of all been a proper needs assessment conducted, we should manage the process appropriately, we should ensure there's a way for us to be able to get feedback from the consultant. There should also be an element of skills transfer. We can't get a consultant in year on year, and then ultimately there should be proper feedback in terms of when the consultant is done, we should be able to determine and do an assessment if we get value for money. So from that point of view, you'll see, we're trying to give an assessment of all the municipalities per audit outcome that we had consulted. Suffice to say, at least you will see more than 50% of the municipalities where the consultants, at least they receive financially unqualified audit outcomes. And some of the main reasons where they got consultants in were, if you look at the bottom line there, where the, I'm going to call it burgundy for lack of a better color, or brownish and light brown all the way to beige colors, and the legends are at the bottom. The one that's only concerning, Chair, is the very first one that talks about lack of records and documents. This is sort of a dog chasing its own tail, because you can get the best person in who understands the job, but he doesn't have the supporting documents to compile financial statements or the performance report. What is he going to do different than what management has done? So if a person comes and the person is a specialist, and at least you give them the supporting documentation and they're able to reconstruct your performance report or your financial report, at least then they're adding value. But we appoint service providers, sometimes knowing well that maybe their supporting evidence is not there, and we try and get them to come in and produce certain information for us. And then obviously, there's other auditing ineffectiveness as well, which is determined based on that specific environment or the reality in that environment where they go to consult in because maybe they weren't doing the monthly management processes, and now all of a sudden we need to produce financial statements, and now we get a consultant in and he comes and helps us as well. Jay, I'm not going to spend any more time on that. If you indulge me on the, just two more slides left, Jay, and then that's it. That's a marathon session, but we're almost done. Okay, Cornelia has already addressed the state of internal control. This just basically says, these are the minimum key controls which we feel should be at any entity, any given point in time that will result in us at least making sure that we're able to achieve favorable audit outcomes. Slight improvements which we noted there in terms of that, we could see that leadership is trying to exact some form of oversight. From an HR point of view, we at least getting the compliance right, although we're still not successful in filling the vacancies or meeting the minimum competency requirements. Our IT will deal with it now in the next slide. Action plans, although we note a regression in terms of the numbers, we still have challenges with regards to the effectiveness of those plans because we noted the number of repeat findings or shortcomings being reported. So in terms of our status of IT, Chair, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one because, again, there was a talk that we'd like to streamline municipalities and local government that they have one financial reporting system, almost like a national or provincial government that are using BAS or PERSAL. So the challenge that you have is, Municipality X will use APEC, Municipality B will use JDN, whatever financial accounting system they got their hands on if it's appropriate. And the other challenge as well, or maybe a benefit, and this is my personal view that could be arrived from this process, is if you have a specific skill that is a municipality in Limpopo, he wants to move to a municipality in KZN, if there's a common system that's been used, a common platform, it's easier for that skill to get transferred to the other province instead of having to now start and learn a new system again from scratch. But in terms of the reality that's there now, these are findings which we've noted. In terms of our governance, we're just talking about, you know, do we have a proper backup plan, continuity plans, all of those formalities in terms of making sure that we put proper governance, our IT steering committees, do we have IT strategy in place that tells us where we're heading to in terms of the future as an entity. So again, the IT controls we implemented, so they have controls, but they still haven't implemented them. When we look at security management, this deals with security of our information. Who is, how do we look after our information? From that point of view, say IT controls to be designed, it means that at that level they don't even have the controls designed, never mind having implemented them. So they must still start scratch and say, how exactly am I going to go about in terms of security management and then go and implement whatever they've decided to design on. User account management, again, this just also deals with password control. Every 6 weeks, the system must prompt you to change your password. Your password must be very strong, otherwise it's easy for people to access the information or effect changes on the system, which are unauthorized. And also our service continuity, but the service continuity I spoke about when I spoke about governance. How often do they do backups? Are the backups for the offsite or not offsite? And where you see dark blue, it means that they haven't even designed the control yet. The light blue means that they've designed the control, they just need to go and implement it. And then the very light blue means that it is working and we merited everything from that point of view. The last slide I'm not going to spend time on, Cornelius has really covered this one very well. I think what's maybe worthwhile to highlight is that the very last, the one we say portfolio committee is local government, it actually excludes the national portfolio committee in the 9 provinces. If you do the sum, then you see it's 5 of 9 and 4 over 9, which gives us those percentages. And really, we do that assessment when you look at the way the constitution is also set up, when an intervention, it comes from this level, then it goes to that level, and then it goes to that level. So my point of view, Chiano, maybe with your permission, this is something we can engage on further, and then maybe would you feel comfortable in us having those types of discussions and also assessing this portfolio committee in terms of its interventions in local government. That's the end of the formal slide. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Chiano Cornet when I said add something up. But in conclusion, Chiano, I'd like to also highlight to the committee that there are a number of interventions and stakeholders who are aware that we are working with as an organization. We did mention that SAUDA, COPPA, and the Treasury, we work closely with those different stakeholders when they requested information with us in trying to come up with their own interventions to help local government move in the right direction. I thank you, Jay.
Well, thank you very much, sir, for your presentation. And invite honorable members to comment and welcome honorable members. We know that there is today is because of the trust. Any point that you want to discuss, let me take honorable Melham and honorable
I've got a couple of questions. In fact, I've got quite a few, but I'll try and be as brief as possible. It starts on page 5, slide 5. I am concerned about the root causes and on the right hand side there, the number of auditees that have not addressed the root causes. Specifically, for example, the slow response and the vacancies, but even the consequence measures, I'm very concerned that there's no action being taken to improve that at a municipal level. Then, just on slide 9, and I look at for example, Limpopo. If I have a look at the bar graph from Limpopo for 2013-14, no unqualified with no findings, so that's a zero. And then you've got 15 that are unqualified with findings. You then go to slide 14. The very first line says there are 19 unqualified auditors, but the numbers don't tie up. Okay? One common thread throughout these slides is the 10 auditees who did not submit reports, whose audits were outstanding, or I'm not sure exactly what the definition is, but you hadn't finalized the audit at the time of the report. What is the current status of those? Are they still outstanding? Who are they? Then on slide 22, and I'm speaking from my personal experience here as a finance portfolio committee member in a metro municipality. One of the qualifications is the ability to, you said it, measure the or verify the fixed assets of the municipality. When I was on that finance portfolio, one of the things that we heard recently was that it is very difficult for a municipality, particularly a small municipality, to verify a pipe that's underground or place a value on a pipe that's under the ground. And I'd really welcome some recommendations or some input as to how you would go about doing that, particularly where a municipality doesn't have the resources to develop that mixed asset. If we carry on the way we are, we're just going to carry on getting complications for the rest of the park. On slide 27, Cruces Wasteful Extension, and I know the nature of that Cruces Wasteful Extension, it's just gone over to your account and late payment. One of the questions that, well, one of the issues that was brought to the portfolio committee a while back, by Selva actually, was that Eskom starts charging interest from day 16 after it works. So they bill the 30th, the 16th of the next month they start charging interest. And that interest was perhaps, but it's a ridiculously high amount. And I'd welcome any input from the AG side as to whether or not that is acceptable, or whether there's any recommendations that can be made in that regard. And also, how much of this and what you said, I feel that 80% of it is interest. So how much of that is extra? We've spoken a lot about supply chain management, and I agree that it's a massive issue. I'm not going to comment further than that. Sorry, just on slide 31. If I look at the bar graph on the left, you've got 2013, your audit teams that have outstanding audits at 10, but then on the right, in figure 3, you've got 13 plus 6 who have outstanding all who haven't supplied a report. That's 19. No report, 13 plus 6. Then on the next slide, slide 32. If we can go to slide 34. Okay, now this is me doing that, and I'm sorry, maybe my math is faulty, but I'm trying to work out. If I have a look at municipalities, for example, I'm assuming that percentage on the bar represents the percentage of municipalities whose municipal managers, for example, don't have the minimum quota. Okay, 20% of municipalities have the municipal managers don't meet the minimum. The numbers don't match up, because surely the same number of municipalities applies in each of the three bars. For example, you've got, if I add up the two numbers there, okay, 46 and 10 is 56 municipalities on those two, and that comes to 24%. But if I look at the next one, CFOs, 54 plus 10 is 64, and yet that's only 27%. So there's a mismatch in your percentages and the number of municipalities. And I'm not sure where the mismatch is coming in, and it goes all the way through. The next one, head of supply chain management, 50 plus 2 is 52, and that's 28%, which is more than the number of CFOs, which is 54 CFOs, if they don't have a minimum competency or were not assessed. So your percentages and your numbers don't match up. I'm going to leave it there for now, Chair. I think there's enough questions that need to be answered in that.
Thank you. If I can start at this slide, my understanding of this, like, is, I mean, there's 335 municipalities that we've reported on. In this slide, we're only focusing on where the properties weren't met. So it won't necessarily tie up because municipal managers won't necessarily be the same number of EFOs without the qualifications. So in a specific assessment of the 335, we've identified those specific that don't have competencies for municipal managers, CFOs, head of supply chain. And then it's only a split between those that didn't meet the requirement and those where we didn't do the assessment. So if you take the balance up, that will be the percentage of municipalities or municipal entities where they actually meet the requirement.
Sorry, Jim, that doesn't actually answer the question. Let's actually do this method.
Okay.
Okay. Let's look at municipalities. If 36 municipalities, the municipal manager does not have the minimum competency, that equals 20% of the municipalities that you assess.
No. It is 20% of the... It can't be 20% of the 335. It can't be. That's what I'm understanding. It's 20% of the ones.
20% of what?
Sure, okay, we'll go to the other question. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Chair, but maybe just the other challenge that we have is because the information is consolidated at the national level, and you get all the information from all the provincial colleagues, the companies in this movement, they just update it and the number keep moving up until such a date that we release the report. And even subsequent to the age release of the actual document, there will be movement. And then what also tends to happen, I remember, is that if you look at the current year we're reporting for 1230, and you look at our 1213 GR, that also sometimes may not have because all the movements and we take into account and all the regulations. But I'll quickly try and address this specific question in terms of the... And that could influence the 10 versus the 19 issue in terms of the movements.
That we did audit, there were 13 receipt municipalities that didn't submit performance information. So they submitted the financial statements, the audit remains, we reported and concluded, but they didn't report on the performance information. So that's why finding of the lack of performance reports. Yeah. So these are the ones that we actually did audit. We will have to come back in terms of the 10 that didn't submit. I quickly checked if I could see it here, but I don't think we've listed the 10 that didn't submit information. And I'm also not sure at the moment, but we can respond to the committee and give feedback on the current status of where they are.
Sorry,
Jen,
another thing maybe to also bear in mind is, if you look at the missing municipalities, that slide of the percentage, is you may find a municipality where there's an MM, but there's no head of supply chain management. So you're assessing the municipality, or you find one municipality with both of them. So that's why the numbers here. Then the one question that was asked is quite a technical question, and it pertinently asked us clearly for a recommendation. But obviously, if I say I can't do something, I must also have a way of you know, how, what I need in order for me to go and assess it. The challenge that we have here is the reality on the ground. Is that if that type was done donkeys of years ago, then you have a challenge in terms of going out there physically and verifying it and getting some numbers attached to it. Because the more recent ones are easier because there's some form of documentation. It tells you exactly what type of pipe it is, what the length was. So at least in the essence of physically verifying it, you can see from source documentation, from some form of engineer certificate, engineer report. But now the pressure still remains that the proper process will follow, even if it was 20 years ago, you should still have the engineer certificate information next day. Now, comes the next question. In the absence of not having that information, because we've said now one of the challenges is proper record management and proper record keeping. I know that, and this is probably not going to be suitable for smaller municipalities, but I know in some of our larger municipalities, they actually get guys up there with some of these fancy gadgets, and they come and they look at, you know, where you say the pipe started, and they measure it. I don't know, there's some machine that they get. Again, how feasible it will be for smaller municipalities to go get, because there's some cost involved, it's accurate equipment, we do not know. But certainly there are some of those ways and means, and one must just find the balance between the effort and the cost involved in order to get that assessment. I know some of the other easier ones as well is if the pipe is there and you know, you open a tap and water's coming out, and the pipe should be there. So from that point of view also, we do apply some, at the risk of sounding condescending, but you know, like some logic, but if there's no water coming out, then I say prove to me that the pipe is really indeed there as well. Our count, we've addressed the ones about the different numbers and the one about pipe in terms of the municipalities, bearing in mind the reality on the ground, you know, you have a larger or smaller municipality or high capacity, smaller capacity. The one way I think Cornelius alluded to that is the Sala one, where we had a win. Actually, Sala raised it 2 years ago already. I also unfortunately do the Orotok Salga, so I've known about these issues and we've tried to engage. But if I'm not mistaken, Chair, and I'm speaking of correction, there is some form of act that ties the says Eskom will, you must pay Eskom before 15th or whatever date is, and then they start charging interest. And there were talks that what is required is for that piece of legislation to be amended, and maybe it's an oversight committee, is maybe sometime prescriptive, is when one could look really into it and say, how can we exert some form of influence and get this done? Because surely, this, me personally speaking, I also don't think it makes business sense if you just exceed in 15 days and you get charged such high copious amounts of interest. But of the 80%, what I can say, although I don't have the number of by half, is that of the 80%, significant portion of it would obviously also relate to Eskom in that regard. What we'll endeavor to do, Chair, is we'll get the actual numbers and then we'll send them through to Secretary for the Honourable Members' attention.
Thank you, Chair. And then there was a question in terms of the causes and the concern. I think that is a real concern. If we look at the flood response, 69%, that is unchanged from last year. The same with the key position, 63%. For me, there's a direct link in terms of the portfolio committee, assure that is also there provided. So that's the oversight body that should also ask the questions in terms of what is the progress, provide feedback. So unfortunately, from our side, the AG side, we can't enforce that. We only highlight the root causes. But somebody in that position in terms of oversight should focus on those root causes and make sure that there is action plan, that it is monitored and implemented.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, and good morning to colleagues, AG, and everyone present. Chair, I'm not really much going to try and interrogate the report, because I think those who were just presenting their findings, I was just interrogate the responsible persons. Chair, to say, I'm worried about the assurance of portfolio committees. I know now the very tail end of this national has found itself exonerated, if I may use the word. But it means, by and large, you've got portfolio committees and provincial legislatures who are either dysfunctional in this area or semi-dysfunctional because they're providing assurance. And that is a major problem, because they are the first tier of assurance really in terms of oversight. And I think that compels this committee to institute some sort of intervention on our part, because surely in the absence of that, we're going to arrive at these problems. I mean, the levels of non-compliance in terms of SCM are horrendous, to say the very least. And that's where the problem is. And so I really would... If anything, really this comes to this committee, very little to do with AG, to say that it presents us with now an added responsibility, an added duty for us to be able to ensure that oversight and the assurance that is needed is provided. at that level, because I don't think this is acceptable. I don't think it's right to have what are termed senior public reps not perform. Chair, I would want to really go into the issue of consultants. I'm not anti-consultants, but I'm anti a flippant use of consultants and the cost factors and the cost implications which it has. Because, that's that I'm looking at. Here, when you've got 265 which is being assisted by consultants to put together their financials, what happens during the course of the year when they don't have to submit to it? Where's the day-to-day, month-to-month, quarter-to-quarter controls that should be taking place? Because what this is, these consultants are voting as a corrective action, the corrective measure to failure now, which for me then sort of skews the assessment that our general is doing. Because I would imagine that you are assessing on the basis of the findings that you receive once the consultants have come in. You are not privy to what it was before those consultants came in. And so it means that we are losing sight of the actual thing that is taking place in 82 of the percent of the OGT, because the auditor general is assessing something that's already been corrected, which, and compounded further, Chair, for me, this becomes a useful expenditure when the consultant has come and paid money and the auditor general comes in again and still has to correct work of a consultant. Because even at that point, there's some movement that takes place in terms of the reliability, in terms of the facts that are presented by those municipalities. So even the quality of the consultants that are being used, there's really little to be desired. And we're already spending good on 355 million rand of money on consultants who still do a short job on that. So I think we really need to also crack the whip in terms of what is being done, the work of consultants, because it seems rather reckless at this point in time, and we're not going to be able to address credibly the reality in those municipalities, because we are auditing something that's already been audited. So I find that tilts us still into a grey area for me, because the person is presenting something that's just already been audited. And the other thing, I would just want to really assess the extent to which the skills transfer is taking place in building institutional capacity, because the slide which does the comparison of municipal managers speaks to that the longer the MM has been there, the better the municipality seems to be doing. So one, all these interventions that are taking place and so on and so forth. But what I did, Mr. Chair, I wanted to, there's municipalities that are placed under administration, Section 139, whether it was A, B, or C. And would want to, I think moving forward in any financial here with those municipalities, we would want an assessment of those municipalities, because they are outside the norm in terms of what is happening. So I don't think we can blanketly put them here and assess them because they're an extraordinary case, because we need to assess whether that intervention is actually yielding results or not. So I think moving forward, we would really appreciate if that information is available for municipalities that here under review were under Section 139 to get the information so that we can actually see what is going on. Finally, Chair, I would like to pose a challenge, really, not a challenge, maybe a humble request, but one out of good concern and necessity in light of what we have received. The issue of municipalities that are offenders, I mean, use another word, the repeat offenders who have that report that speaks to municipalities that over the past 5 years have not moved at all. And I think the portfolio committee assurances, as low as it is, it compels this committee, can't we do something? Let us, because people are being paid money, Chair. They're receiving salaries, and budgets are being allocated year in and year out, but there's still no movement, and they're spending recklessly and irresponsibly. I think it's high time that we actually call those municipalities before this committee. because we can't have municipalities over 5 years really receiving an audit outcome which is an adversary disclaimer, constantly in the back foot, on the back burner for 5 years and probably more. And of course the problem is compounded by all a host of things, and I think we need to zoom in into all those things so that you can be able to assist those municipalities. So I just wanted to make those broad stroke observations because I think the AD was presented to us their findings that they are, and for us moving forward to develop a program of action and action plan on how to do respond to this. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think from our side, we share the concern in terms of consultants and the sustainability after they are not there. Because that's what I also alluded to in the beginning, to say there is staff that is at those municipalities that should instill and have the skills, comply with the daily distance of implementing the controls, monitoring the controls. So as soon as the consultants are thrown, the risk is there that they're going to regress again. Unfortunately, we don't have the skills to answer information. I don't know if that is specifically said. Just looking at this, I think what is also concerning to me looking at this is consultants that didn't deliver. I mean, there was 3% in terms of performance information, 12% in terms of financial statements. So they were paid as part of the 765 million rand, but however, there is an assessment that it didn't deliver. In terms of, we know the request in terms of the water under administration, I think that's a valuable point and we'll take that back so that they can separate focus on those specifically. I think the others were more in terms of comments and actions for the committee to take forward.
Like I alluded to a little bit earlier, I didn't do one advice, but it could be controversial as well. But I think that the only challenge, the Honourable Feng, one of your interventions that you mentioned, you said that you maybe it's time that the portfolio committee call those municipalities in front of this committee. And maybe just, I don't know who our advisor is, maybe, but just from a legal point of view, just consider the legal implications, because often the challenge is that this is the national government, you've got the provincial sphere and then the local government sphere as well, and then in terms of how it's constructed and engineered in terms of the constitution, that the municipalities report their own structures as set up in terms of their process. So from that point of view, just consider the legal implications in terms of how we will go and implement that intervention.
Thanks, Jefferson. Without being metaphysical, I think Honorable Shengwa has covered most of the points. My concern would be on the recommendation, because I believe as we are here, as all of us, we aspire for a better South Africa, where citizens will be receiving services as they should, and they should be available for money. You have made mention of the challenges that are there in municipalities, municipalities not complying. You have mentioned municipalities not adhering to legislation in terms of them giving the correct results. So in this recommendation, as they've also made mention that you're working with other stakeholders such as Salka and Horta. So my question would be, as you're recommending now, and you've been working closely to do municipalities, but when you are recommending now, I feel that the pace is moving very slow. Because you cannot be, as of this time, maybe be recommending. You can rather be giving us a report that says, you know what, Municipal A has not been complying. And then we've assisted that municipality, as these stakeholders. And the intervention has been this. Because I don't think that, you've done 2013, 2014, and then you've seen those, and now we are at the end, maybe, of the political team of the office, and then these things have been occurring. So to me, you should be saying, you know what, Municipal A has been assisted like this, and these are the records in terms of the interventions that we have done. Because when they're recommending to me at this time, to me, you're basically giving me the thing that you're not working as you say you are working together as you say could have. Maybe somewhere there are challenges that you are not like telling us where it's holding for you to be saying at the time. You know, we are definitely sure that, you know what, even the new term of office when it begins will be there, we'll be sailing smoothly. Because we've covered all areas and we've given whatever necessary assistance that is required for us to say at the end of the day, our municipalities are there, they are adhering to legislation and the constitution, and people of this country are receiving what they should be receiving in terms of services, and there is also value for money. Okay.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you very much, Chief Professor. Just a few questions. The first one is really starting with the current. Material as a given, that the AG's office is keen on progress. What are the kinds of forecasts that we can make in relation to what will be happening and where will it be in the next 3 years? And financially, you know, in 2017, the subsidy. The second question is about the role of SALT and its partners. The question links to what Honorable Zimbo has raised. But is that I wasn't fast enough to catch up with what was being said. So can it be restated? What are these partners? What's the role? Has been the role of SALCA and others? The third question is on slide 36. The question really is will I be correct in saying that the west, in terms of the provinces, are northwest, Northern Cape, MP, Malawa, and the Free State in that order? If that is so, can we solve the contradictions between the incidents? So the question that I'm basically posing is, how can governments be right? Governments on one hand, but both financial management, performance management, financial performance management, and leadership be not in place or right? Isn't there going to be something there? The fourth question is really on the municipalities that I mentioned on slide 26. There's Mandela there, Mokasana, Mokamente, Afaba City, Kinsabazanjebo, and the mounds. As stated, what I'd like to really see is and catch is a sense of the breakdown. If I just say that in this Mandela, in monetary terms, the problem is one by billion dollars. What does that constitute of? If you care, that would be very useful. Just a sense. And the last question is on supply chain management. On slide 25, you deal with issues of relation to supply chain management. There are councillors, awards to other officials of the state, awards to the family, and the government contract management, and decision of the scope of all its awards. What I really like to know here is it all possible? It has to be a sense of what are the specific municipalities. I know, as you said, my information has been made available to management. I hope you're not touching the issue of saying, there is information available. But I just want to have a sense of is what is the worst? What is the worst you have? The municipality with the list of this kind of problem, and what is the municipality that has presented itself as best practice in this regard? That's what Jefferson, who may have to know some of this information.
There's a couple of detailed information that we don't have, but I've made notes in terms of information that hasn't requested that we will come back on in terms of best practices from this practice that is doing good. The detail in terms of supply chain contraventions, the ECM contravention, we will have to go back to our auditors in the provinces and just get some of that detail. So we've noted it and we'll come back. I just also want to refer back in terms of the comment or the question in terms of the recommendations, and that there has been a time lapse. I agree there has been a time lapse, but we should also remember that there are role players, and for me, internal audit is better situated to monitor the progress in terms of recommendations. As external audit, we can't be there a full year. So we go in, especially the smaller municipalities, I mean, they just don't have the fees to accommodate us there for that. So I think another recommendation is internal audit should be more proactive, assisting management there, monitoring the recommendations and assist management to make sure that those are all implemented.
Honourable Member, just to add on to what Gourmet is saying as well, is that once we've also issued the recommendations, what we do as Office of the AG and talk to the SPAD or the key controls, is the key controls is not just an annual process. What we do as Office of the AG, we go on a quarterly basis to the municipalities and we go and do those assessments. And one of the assessments that we follow up on is a follow-up on the implementation of the action plan. So on a quarterly basis, even to the smaller municipalities, we do try, and even sometimes we don't even recover those fees. So the furthest municipality in the Northern Cape, somebody will go on a quarterly basis and sit with the MMO, whoever is responsible in terms of the financial side, and look at those key control status and come up with a dashboard. That's what we call the dashboard smiley faces report. So we do try to sort of look at it as it's been implemented throughout the year in terms of its recommendations. And this is just an overall synopsis, culmination of all those results. And we come at the end of the year and we say, we've been monitoring you throughout the year. Now let's look at the status at the end of the year and give the status here. If you look at the individual report, which we send to each and every municipality, it's actually got smiley faces on either a green face or a yellow face or a red face. So we look at those interventions and how they are being implemented throughout the process. But as we're saying, for the more focused interventions, the office cannot do that. And then the other issue that will come up as well is independence, because we must provide management with a space to go and implement those interventions so we can come and assess them at the end of the period as well.
So I can refer to this site 36 and the anomalies where we say leadership, financial management, but we see improvements in governance. This slide is really showing improvements. So it might mean that previously there wasn't the internal audit, there wasn't the audit committee. Now at least when we went there, we found those structures in place so they can start exercising their oversight role. So next year it might be that that will be expected, because now they are there, now we're going to see what have they started doing, what is the questions that they asked, what is the oversight that they have been performing. In terms of the outcomes 2017, we wish we knew, but if I look at the trend for 5 years, I mean, everything is showing that there should be slow improvement going forward. We don't expect a sudden improvement, But, I mean, the trend of the past 5 years really show that there is a consistent way of improving. And that's in all the areas. It's the outcomes, I mean, the assurance levels, we've seen that, the key controls, we've seen that. So if the momentum is there, I can't see that there will be regression. But obviously that is something in the future we don't know. Change of leadership, changes might impact.
I think that's important to correlate, just said in the closing remarks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, is because regardless of who's on guard in terms of the leadership, it's all about the process. If you can have those processes and procedures in place to make sure everything is running run of the mill, it doesn't matter who's in charge in terms of, you know, so we can't blame NEC in 2016. It is a risk for us, as with all new change in leadership. There's elections that are coming up in 2016. We don't know how those will impact on the audit outcome. But we are of the opinion that at least at the minimum, those controls are already in place, those processes have been implemented, everything is functioning effectively, they don't have an adverse impact on the outcomes. It should still continue on this progress side that we see. So I also make use of this opportunity to respond to the role of other stakeholders. I know I'm a little bit naughty, Honorable Maswanda, by mentioning South and other stakeholders, but I was just trying to create a portfolio saying that at least there are other stakeholders involved there, because the challenge with us was when we go to the municipalities, when the municipalities say, Matsanda was here, National Trade, or the treasuries were here, Kokas, OCA, and all of them had the same intervention on the same area. So it's not really adding value from a point of view, how are they going about identifying where they should be focusing their intervention. So what we've done is, through our engagements, at least we determined that if you look at the back to basics and you look at SAGAS, they call it the Municipal Audit Support Program, the MAS program. If you look at it, there is some form of I want to call it coordination. It does talk to each other because addressing the key root causes, the key challenges we've identified and we escalated to them. It's now the minister, if I'm not mistaken, sometime in last year, September, October, had an intervention or session with all these particular stakeholders as well, where they were really sitting around the table and trying to identify who's going to play what role in which area, so that there is no duplication of efforts in that regard. But as far as the actual interventions are concerned, I'm not at liberty to represent SAGA, Mr. Kalila George, Mr. Makwetu, please, my salary, not Mr. George. But at least from that point of view, there is a coordinated effort, Honorable Maswanda, where looking at making sure they don't duplicate efforts and they're focusing on the right areas. Our view is always in that if you look at the way they set up, SAGA should be looking at the training of the counselors and the soft skill intervention. If you look at Treasury, they should be looking at the financial management. If you look at COCTA, because they're sitting with a grant, they do the basic services, which is a mid-grant, they should be more focused in terms of getting the infrastructure and service delivery. And if you look at it, what we've discussed yesterday, you have your basic services, so your infrastructure covered, you have your financial management covered, and you also have your HR management issues covered if they allocate those functions in that regard.
Thank you very much, and my apologies for arriving late. I hope that my apology was forwarded to the chair. Okay. And obviously it puts me in a disadvantageous position because I wasn't there when the presentation started. Yeah, firstly, I just want to say that I think we must just note that this news that we are receiving today, I have stayed because this information was released to the public some weeks back. It is a bit unfortunate because I thought that we were supposed to be the first to be engaged in terms of interacting with this information about local government. As you know, that we are a committee of parliament that is responsible for providing that oversight. And therefore, most of the things that are, most of the information that is contained here you would expect that an oversight mechanism like this committee should be the first to receive that information so that we can be able to follow up if necessary. So I don't know what made us to get this information the last. But that be that as it may, just 2 points from my side. I note that on slide 3, and that's also to follow up on what the lady for Sanga was saying. The slide on page 6. I think one of the key questions, or one of the key indicator that is coming out of here is that local government finances are slowly turning the corner. Because if you add up the unqualified with no findings, together with the unqualified with findings, in 2007-8 it was 39%. Those two added up together, which can be defined as almost like positive audit outcomes. So 39%, 2011-12, 48%, 2012-13, 49%, and the year under review is 58%. So there is slow progress that has been made in terms of the management of local government finances. But it is not sufficient, because this has to go beyond 90% so that we achieve what it was said previously for the clean audits in 2014. It's quite a positive development, Chair, and I think we must just acknowledge that more needs to be done. And from 49% to 58%, it's almost like a 9% increment. It's not bad. It's quite positive. But I think, as it has been said before, because this information was commented before, so what we are doing was just adding the comments that have been there before. It's really quite positive to have this kind of outcomes, without necessarily underplaying the fact that more needs to be done to make sure that we get 100% clean audit. The second point I want to speak on is slide number 34 on the municipal competencies. I'm not so sure that there are recommendations from the Office of the Auditor General. But for the municipalities, 20%, which is 46, of municipal managers, 23% of CFOs, and 27% of SCMA heads. I think it should be very, very worried, sir. But remember, the question of the minimum competencies was not introduced last year or the year before. It was long introduced. And by now, we should expect that almost all senior managers meet the minimum competencies. And I don't think it is just sufficient for us to restate, or for the point to be restated here in the report. But I think what we need is the recommendation. What then must happen? Because everybody else must meet those minimum competencies. I think either from the recommendation of the Auditor General or ourselves as a committee, we need to be able to determine what should happen to those who don't meet minimum requirements. Of course, within the context of our respect for the labor legislation regime that exists, but I don't think we should accept that people must continue to be employed without meeting the minimum competencies.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I was going to my notes and I missed one slide that I had my questions on, and that was slide 30. On slide 30, which refers to the financial health of the organization, and this is where I'm going to disagree a little bit with my colleague, although there has been an improvement in audit outcomes, it does not necessarily impact an improvement in the financial health of the municipality. All it says is that their reporting is getting better. It doesn't say that their actual finances are improving. And there's a big difference between the two. And that's why I went and had a look at slide 30, which actually said that we're actually worsening from a financial perspective than improving. Now, my question relates to the first block on the left, the going concern block. And I'd like some indication as to the commonality of those municipalities or municipal entities. In other words, 39% of the audits were in a net current liability, and 36% of the audits had a deficit for the year. Are they the same people? Are they the same municipalities? Is there an overlap between them? And if that's the case, are they then budgeting for further deficits? Are they budgeting for losses? And can we then regard these as sustainable organizations? My second question on the same slide is on the bottom right-hand box, which is about the spending cap capacity. And in this regard, the gentleman from AG spoke about how he actually audits COGA from the other side and the MIG from the other side. Now, I realize we don't have that information in front of us, but perhaps you can give us an indication. One of the concerns is about the misuse of conditional grant funding. For example, MIG funding being used to fund operational expenditure. And I can give an example of this. McConnell Municipality, which was supposed to spend money on upgrading its water supply, used MIG funding to pay salaries of the top. Now, can you give us an indication of the scope of that issue and what is being done to address it? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to work in reverse because those are the more recent questions on my mind. The first one, Chair, is the MIG funding. Certainly, we also do provide feedback on it because in our actual report, which was issued by the AD himself, basically trying to face to it, there is an analysis which we have conducted. It's a very high-level analysis. So what it does, it says how many municipalities were allocated, how much, and where we have spent money, whether it be 100% relevant, if we look at those related targets have been achieved. And like you rightfully pointed out, we can only report on what management has reported. So management will in performance report after the following targets or indicators, which deal specifically with how I'm going to spend the conditional grant, which is now the MIG grant. And then we look at this, about the money and how we spend, let's look at whether the target, a specific target has been achieved. And we found that although 88% of the budget has been spent, 83% underspending, although 88% of the budget has been spent, we found that I think only 49% of all targets, 49 or 54% of all targets, which is related to the MIG grant, had been reported as achieved. So that's a big indication that money has not been spent in accordance with the intended purpose. But from our point of view, certainly it is for management to follow up, it's for committees such as this one to do the follow-up action and engage with municipalities in terms of that, because like you rightfully pointed out, it's not good just to report that you've had 100% spending, because we had 100% spending, but it's a resultant output there on the ground in terms of what that fund was, what it ended for. So we just give a high-level synopsis in terms of saying, yes, 100%, and we can get the municipalities where they was reported, but that's just a list of that. And then, with regards to the commonalities on this slide, yes, there are some of those municipalities where there would be commonalities where you would find the current liabilities are exceeding the current asset, and that they're also in a net deficit position in the end of the financial year. And remember, these are just indicators. So we look, whether individually or in aggregate, they just indicate saying that your financial health position is not in a way in which it should be, and raises the question with regards to sustainability. But I think your detailed question is you'd like to see the list of those as well, so we can get a list of those from our provincial auditors. With regard to Honourable Chair, you always refer to him as Phil. I don't know his surname, so Mapula. Mapula, sorry, I apologize because I can't now be familiar with Honourable Phil as well. Yes. I appreciate it. It's a thing that we have and I can't come outside and take advantage of the same room. So, Chair, having said it, there were two key issues for us which were raised. The first one is with regard to the timing of the report. Now, unfortunately, yes, it is a little bit late, but I'm sure you would bear in mind that we did have an opportunity to come and present to the committee on the 23rd of June. Unfortunately, that didn't take place, but the report was actually released by the Office of the AG on the 3rd of June. So had we done it then, it would have been a little bit more recent news. But the process also makes it a little bit, it elongates the process, because if you look at how the cycle works, the municipalities have 3 months to go and populate their financial statements, or 2 months. The AG has 3 months. So the report is only issued at the end of November of each annual cycle. And once we have ascertained what the outcome is, then it's a consolidation process that we engage in. We're trying to sharpen that process up. You would call last year, we released the report in July. This year is June. Hopefully, as time goes on, we'll also improve that consolidation process. But in terms of the consultation, I am aware that our AG, Mr. Makwetu, had, I think it's cabinet, where he briefed cabinet on the 15th of May 2015, before the actual release of the report. So we did try to engage stakeholders, and I'll make sure that in the future, if the need is for this committee to also have it, that we, as soon as that information is available and it's draft information, then we can come and engage you on it. Unfortunately, because at that stage it will still be draft information, it will not probably be an open session, but at least you'll have the benefit of that information very earlier for your own purposes in terms of planning yourself as a committee and doing what you do in terms of oversight. Thank you, Chair. The other comment that Honorable Plana made was with regard to the 2040. Yes, we do agree there's progress, and we've noted that, and it's also of the opinion that it's quite slow progress, but it is progress nonetheless and in that regard. What is the fundamental difference is that, you know, we are focused on the reporting, unfortunately, and there could be other things that are there that, for example, if I could get clean audit opinion, but there are no services happening, one day we will hopefully be geared in terms of reporting performance information. Corinne, is there anything you would like to add?
Thanks, Chair. I think there was a question in the recommendations when it comes to minimum competencies. There's nothing specifically in the report, but if I think of it, I mean, first of all, the minimum qualification framework has been set, so we know what the competencies is. So if there's vacancy, first recommendation should be, I mean, advertise for that requirement and make sure the position is full for that requirement. If there is existing people in, I mean, there should be an assessment on what level those people are. Can the skill and competency be enhanced through training, or should be there a formal qualification or more formal training? Unfortunately, when it comes to these things, there's also labor relations. So as long as the person is performing, you can't say, you know, what, you don't have the qualification. And then, having said that, the next recommendation should be, I mean, there should be clear performance agreements for the year to say, you know what, you're in this specific position, this is what I expect of you in the year, and if that is not met, I mean, then another process can be started to say there is non-performance, and then that process can start it. If there's another placement or what the case might be. So I just wanted to give, in terms of recommendations, that. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much for the presentation. Take upon that. I think Malaham and also Mapulana was raising. Have it as a very classified information before public. As it did it, it was a discussion around this issue. I think yes, time will do that. And I think it would be very useful to do so. And we have noted your recommendation that you require things. Also, the one that we're supposed to do on every same one, the one that we are in, just pushing a little bit to nudge the local authorities. And not a bad idea to reach the ground, I would not have my input to the local authorities there and try to assist them to come if they feel an effective in what they're doing. I think that's fine in terms of the presentation. I think that is. We can then now move to the state of the country. Of course, allow you to make your final conclusion. And then we have to cover whether we are progressing or we are worried about the local authority. Given the fact that next year, I know that we are emphasizing the fact that Mason was facing the leadership issue. And that we all know that next year is local government election. Therefore, we may have change of leadership. I don't think, of course, because leadership will change automatically, we're going to be worse off. Because they would have employed very qualified people there. just assume that our tribe are going to make some follow-up on that. There's a point that is made by Honorable Sam that we should consider inviting those municipalities that have been assisted and assisted and assisted and assisted, but they can't go forward. That we should invite them. I know that you have agreed also that you are going to invite the minister, from the town and bring us on many issues for some sense of the community. I think it should be there. I think we should consider then inviting the municipalities that time when we want to invite that to come before the community and assist us. Why they can't improve? But so many years being assisted to do so. And then you know the state of local authority, local municipalities as well. I think it's in the Auditor General raising a point that in other areas are improving, one or two a little bit for the directors, but it seems general that improving in very low 15 years of local government, but local government, I think they are trying to make some point. And I think it's very crucial for the community really to make some oversight questions. Meet with the team that is doing some work. Visit some of those local authorities, just engage with them, assisting them at the time. Well, some are very poor at employing very senior qualified people. But all we know as a city here that very few people want to go and work in rural areas. Even Shema doesn't want to go and work in rural areas. They just go in there because you go and visit there. Visit the homesteads. Generally, don't work there. You went to Cape Town and saw them in Devon. But the point that sometimes there are very small local authorities, and soon our local authorities too small. There are many of them that are very small in the Eastern Cape. Hence, I think, Madam, the decision that we have supported ourselves, that we have a possible them as match. And then there must be criteria, because I have to take criteria that they must manage. Because otherwise we have no revenue to work. And we visited anyway in the northwest, and we realize some of the challenges that are facing local authorities around water. Hence, we made the point that it's just when we visit them, we don't have the auditor's office with us. In future, we will invite you when you are available. I know that you're not on that terms, but you can support us. I thought the part of us with follow Kenzo State. Very important of Kenzo State, and the public protectors in the Kenzo State. And I think we should try to do this thing and push it. Of course, next year are elections, someone, and then I think we have laid the foundation in over 15 years. So I think that's what the Auditor General's office is saying, that there are some improvements, other areas aren't improving. But just for metros, 8 metros and bigger cities, how is improvement there? Are they improving? Papalo City is for Honorable Mela, and because I want to persuade them to go back there. Is improving the measures, you know, but what I saw is saying that Gauteng is a bit of retraction. I think Gauteng another province, so that we are cited in terms of representation. And then, how is your view on this matter, local, the bigger cities and metros? Are we making a lot of progress there, or generally, we are not doing well in those areas? Because they do have resources that are better than smaller towns. And then, how is the situation there?
We are just trying to see if there's something specifically on the metros.
But I said that generally the metros are deemed to be very because they've got access to all the resources. People are, you know, they've got advantage of organization in the sense that they, while it's bringing its own problems, also brings a skill to the Islam. So we'll just check it for you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. I think while I'm listening, if you don't get anything, we can also send to all the other information that we've promised. And I think we are looking forward to continue supporting you and helping this committee in society oversight. Thank you.
Well, we'll get the information. I think the standards are for in general for services in the area that they the people are listening is very much to take into account. Because it's for South African, the fact that the people are not taking the decisions. The cities become centers of action. And then surely, you wouldn't say, for instance, we don't know what is happening in Tokyo, but generally, in the biggest city, and the biggest city in the country. In terms of organization, the biggest city in Africa, not in terms of fact, Cairo is the city, of course, but generally, the very important city. My view is that we must always focus on the biggest cities in terms of our own profession. Because people are creating, we all know now that some of the artificial houses that are located are empty. And we can go there and have the 9,000 free of charge, come on staff. But in fact, I don't want to go there because there are no opportunities for better life. I think the cities to me are very critical in the world. Even the toilets of the climate change, all of the things that are going to be executed. I think it's a kind of business. And this will be the one who are local authorities, the leader, you can just leave it and leave it. But they wouldn't collapse the country, they collapse. They can't still move. But if we want to say, around in this collapse, surely housing will collapse. And therefore, the measure is that it will protect our people. If it does, on collapses, but they can't, they can just move on. That's how they can contain alone, but who cares? You know, people are ready to go again. So from that era of life. This has become very, very important for us. But I think Andres will do it as we engage, because the system will be engaged. But it would be important just to check the data system. The last 10 years, how they're doing, I think, for places. Kind of the real performance on that. Or even in terms of processes that are processing because they're using their whole system. They're using supply chain and not really capacity. Therefore, the stage as we go on, they won't have resources to the people. Because building very comfortable municipality managers take longer. They also have the competent people in supply chain management, take longer. Therefore, we need a very consistent process of ensuring that they can move forward. Climate, of course, climate of collapse is tomorrow, no one cares. It's only you, complain about that. Because all is one is in heaven already, the whole day to build the weekend. And then that's why the cities are very important for us. And I think we continue with those issues as we engage in the for the engage with you almost every 6 months. That's what this discussion is very important for us. Important for us when we go for our side transition. Not important for us for economic growth of our country. That we should really not get this issue biggest issue.
I don't know if you have access to this report. It's the GR, the form report which was issued. We handed out a couple of copies the last time we were here. If you look at the very last, it's at NHS on page 159, when it starts schedule number 10, it's NHS. It gives you the details per municipality, what the outcome was this year, what it was last year, what they had findings on compliance, HR, so you'll see when it's a big error, it means it's a repeat from last year. When it's an N, it means it's a new finding. When it's addressed, it's a green with an A. But somewhere in the back of the NHS SL check contains this information, which is a five-year comparison of all municipalities. I think it's all municipalities. And what I've done quickly is I just circled all the metros, and we've got the, at the risk of not going into too much detail, we've got the Ekurhuleni metro, which is green. It means unqualified with no findings in the current year. And in the previous 4 years, it was always yellow. So at least it was financially unqualified, maybe with findings here and there. Malawung metro was red, it was green for 2 years in the beginning of the 5 years. Then it moved a little bit to the qualification, which was green, they were showing some improvement. And then in the last results, they were financially unqualified, but still was fine. So they moved from disclaim to qualified, at least now to a clean process. Equini, unfortunately, has maintained being yellow, so always financially unqualified, but still with challenges on compliance and the performance information reporting. Similarly for Tane Metro as well, also stayed over the past 5 years in the yellow category. I know, Chair, we've got eight metros in those are just the ones I could find quickly off the cuff. City of Johannesburg Metro was purple for 3 years, so it was qualified, and then for the past 2 years it's now financially unqualified, but still with challenges on compliance and performance, that it is financially unqualified. Those were the ones that I could quickly find off. Buffalo City was red, and then it got adverse, and now it's been qualified over the past 3 years. So, and Nelson Mandela Bay, over the past 3 years, also qualified. I think, Chair, that's, I think I've covered the part of it.
Okay, no, that's fine. I'm just saying that as we engage on this, from time to time, you capture these areas.
No, 100%. Thank you, Chair.
So, and all the members of parliament, they're also informed about it, because it's easy to call those mayors to come here. But we get difficult to call a mayor from a very serious rural area to come here. But just to come here, we're still a question. And we know that kind of person is still a question. It's not a very issue. I think that mayor that even to tell him to call. That is wasting money coming to take time. I think Anders, we should do that. And from time to time, we'll link up more, because it's not just an issue of green, but the performance. Whether the performance is improving or not. Because we can be unqualified, very clean on that, because we're not doing anything. And we can do that also. I think we should just deal, because I know that you deal with performance also. I think that assist us to say this one has improved. But also the performance in Iraq is also improved. And then it corresponds, not just people just use content, no performance. They are very good in terms of pronouncement of the labels. I think that's very useful to us. Very useful information. I think what the agenda is also is very important to us. It assists us just to know exactly the state of our local governance and what are the challenges. And one of them must also know that when it takes long to order, it's a very difficult thing. You have a difficult time to run. It's a very easy process to think that teaching will run very easily. But from another corner of the head, it's running a problem. Thank you very much for your presentation. Very useful information. Of course, we have been reading it here for some time, because we have been reading it for some time. Now, that is the thing. We're going to invite those that you have been invited to come before this commission. We also use the information in the MC.
Thank you.